From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's always good to have old friends who've never actually done the show before. They pretend like I'm a professional for once in my life. Let's talk to a couple of gentlemen who, as writer producers, go back to Gee Whiz, I guess Superbad. And then, well, of course, as directors, This Is the End and The Interview, and the producers of a new film now, Good Boys. But more importantly, they're here for an Amazon adaptation. Their second work with Garth Ennis. The first was with AMC The Preacher, but now The Boys, the first comic ever to use an NWA album cover as the as a ripoff for its cover. It's, of course, I'm talking to Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank
first
you.
Thing, let me ask you this. At some point, everything you guys write or are attracted to, grown men are crying.
Yes. You need that.
Just reflects reality. Yes. Men are crying. You're not seeing a lot of it, but they're out there bawling.
We're crying, guys. Guys should cry more. That should be portrayed more.
I don't know if you guys can portray it anymore.
At exactly. If more men cried, there'd be less problems in the world, I would say, probably.
We cry a few times every work day.
We have cry sessions. Yeah.
But to think about that, it's happened so often.
It does.
And something we've never actually talked about, but something I've wanted since you're sitting here in front of me.
We have our characters do the things we can't emotionally. We've both killed that part of ourselves. I think we both come from the school. I mean, especially with comedy, where like trauma is funny, kind of, and the more miserable your characters are, generally, the funnier things are, which is a good thing for a comic to learn at a young age and is a good philosophy. I think it's a good tool. It's like a coping mechanism in general where, like, I mean, when we were writing Superbad, like, something bad would happen to us and we'd be like, oh, we can at least put this into our work in some capacity.
Bullies can't take that
exactly,
away from us.
The bullies can't bully away our comedy aspirations. And so, I think in general, this idea of like comedy and pain and entertainment and pain and sadness and is
makes us write men.
Yeah, exactly. It's always been a very tangible theme in our work, I think. Yeah.
But often somebody who thinks of himself as being the alpha male and is wrong about that is the one who's crying too. I mean, this.
Yes. We like to break down strong men.
which kind of fits in with the interest that you guys have in British comics creators, because they're so dystopian and there's such a kind of this idea of sort of tearing down the hero myth.
Yeah.
Well, and they do it with like such a passion, the British guys. Like they have this weird passion
an Irish
they specifically seem to have.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating. Like and what we do actually find is that we share similar, like, because we're Canadian, so we both grew up in places where like you are watching American culture. Like, they are watching it from very afar. We're watching it from, like, not that far, but it is still not our culture, you know what I mean? We found a lot of common ground with people who aren't necessarily American.
It's funny, because I think about This Is the End, and that could almost be something written by Garth Ennis. It's dystopian. It's about how a bunch of alpha males sort of act when they're basically put in a really claustrophobic situation.
Yeah. When we were doing Preacher, one of the things we found was, like, a lot of our sensibilities was actually kind of defined by Preacher in a lot of ways, you know? And I think a lot of the things we loved, like Pulp Fiction and things like that, in some way took some cues from Preacher, you know? And I think, or they were things that were kind of converging at around the same time, you know? And that was all stuff that we grew up loving. So
It was like literally our most formative years were the years we were reading Preacher. It just like lined up perfectly to kind of infuse that sensibility in us.
Yeah, and it was this, like, also around the same time, that, like, Pulp Fiction was coming out and that, like, Evil Dead and kind of Army of Darkness and Dead Alive and those kinds of movies, and we, like, loved that stuff.
It's a treatment. We're talking about tearing down American culture with two Canadians,
I guess.
Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen.
We've done a good job of it, yes.
According to some, we really have.
Yeah, both literally and figuratively.
And still doing it. But again, if we look at both The Interview and This Is the End, I can really see the influence of Ennis on them, because they take sort of archetypal cultural figures in them as well, and what you do in both those movies. And Preacher does that. Certainly The Boys does that.
Yeah.
The idea of just taking, I mean, right down to go back to the original The Boys, there's a character, well, Huey, the hero, is supposed to be Simon Pegg. You can tell.
Yeah. They cast him in a comic book, which was so strange. And it's funny because it is something that we had actually talked about. Like, I remember when The Boys came out, it was like a joke that we had been saying where, like, it'd be funny to cast actors in a comic book. And then they did. I literally remember we bought The Boys. I'm like, oh, they did it. Like, they put Simon Pegg in a comic book. And, which is a weird thing to do. Like,
I think that someone called him and asked if it was okay first.
I don't think they did. I remember someone just told him, like, did you know you're the star of a comic book? And he was like, huh? And then we could get to the bottom of this with relatively easily.
Can we call Simon Pegg on this show?
I'm sure you can call
before
Simon
the
Pegg.
End of the day. We could figure out the answer to this question. But yeah, it's a weird thing to do, and it is kind of like this is the end in a weird way. Like it is again, breaks the fourth wall kind of.
That's why I brought
it
up. Yeah. It's entirely like that to me.
Yeah,
Rosario Dawson also made a comic,
but she did it herself.
Featured herself.
Yeah, which is also good.
Yeah, which was also awesome, and I wish I could.
It's like it's super, and people just love it more than anything. I think like audiences are ready for it. And it's funny because like we were talking about like you know because of the Tarantino movie, I was like we were talking about like Once Upon a Time in the West and all those Clint Eastwood movies, and I think it was a similar thing where it was like westerns were this like big like colorful like bouncy genre that was super popular, and then some people came in and were like, what if these movies were like cool and like dark and violent and kind of acknowledged what a weird time this was and how crazy these movies are, and didn't kind of like glamorize it, but instead kind of like made almost jokes about it and winked at it a little bit. And it's a similar thing. And I think with The Boys and things like that, like, and it's what we've kind of like done a little bit, like with our various movies in some ways, where it's like when we made Superbad, like high school movies sucked, and there was kind of this sense of like, what if there was like a good one? Like, and same with Pineapple Express, like the idea of making weed movies was just like, you know, ridiculous, but we were like, what if it was kind of like a cool, interesting one?
Well, what if there were an actual story in it? Which is to say.
Exactly. What if there was a plot? And, but with The Boys, more than anything, I think, and why I think people are responding to it so much is because, like, superhero things are so popular, but they're all so, like, one thing. And even Deadpool, which I love, is still a part of that world very firmly, you know? And so the idea, I think that, yeah, we were able to kind of add, like, the scope and production value and wardrobe and characters of, like, the things people already like watching, but that we were able to really kind of acknowledge the times and the climate and subvert it as much as possible, and also just kind of make it, like dark and cool and be like, what if, like those old movies, be like, what if this was actually happening? It would be up.
Well, it's like you were talking about that. You reminded me of me reading the first issue of Marvel Man.
Yeah.
Alan Moore's. Then what would it be like if Captain Marvel says magic word in front of you?
Yeah.
Well, you'd be blinded by
it. Yeah, exactly.
You'd be burned to death. But, you know, what we're talking about, though, is the idea of taking something and finding the comedy in it, but not making it, strictly speaking, a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And which is what you guys do a lot, because there's still like a lot of emotional content. And I feel like one of the things you respond to in so much of this British stuff, too, is that the world is real. Even though there are elements of it that is so exaggerated as to be comedic, there's still, you have to live with that reality that you're talking about, the incineration or other things that happen in The Boys that I don't want to give too much away about, including the thing that sets the whole thing into motion.
Yeah.
But go ahead. What are you going to say, Evan?
Well, I was just going to say that I think something unique that ties into that is it's the characters go deeper than in any of the other kind of superhero things you've seen. Like, to the laser eyes, like, imagine what they would do to a body, but it's also imagine what it would do to your mind to be the guy who shoots lasers. And this show has this weird opportunity to, like, investigate the psychology in, like, a drawn-out way that goes really deep with characters that are similar to what people have seen, that I think It makes all the action and all that stuff like matter, because it's about the like psychosis some of them have and the struggles some of them have, and it's all about this like mental hurdle, all these mental hurdles these people who are hyper messed up and have more stress than anyone ever would have to like overcome.
And also, this character they were talking about, the Homelander, just that when he enters a room, it's almost like a super villain walking into a room, when in fact he's a hero, but also he's not only a hero, but in both the show and the comic, what's done so well in the show, he's also a brand.
Yeah, he's a brand, and he's scary. Like, I think that's the other thing that, like... I think is interesting about the show and that they do very well is, like, the discomfort kind of everyone feels around the superhero. It's like being around, like, a weapon, you know? Like, it's like whenever I'm around anyone with a gun, I'm super uncomfortable. Like, I just don't like it. Like, and I think it's a similar thing that they portray where it's like the Homelander is just, like if you were around Captain America, it would be really scary. Like, he could kill everyone in really fast with, you know, like, and that, and you just hope he doesn't, but it would be a super scary thing to be around.
Well, and there's even the littler things like, if he sneezes, are we going to be okay?
Yeah, what's going to happen?
Is everyone going to be fine? Like, if he fainted and fell backwards, would he crush the floor and the person behind him?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows what kind of PTSD he has? He's been around a long time.
Which we see.
What if someone drops something? Yeah.
But also what's great about, and for you guys, both for Preacher and for The Boys, is that these comics are taking all points rather than something you want to be entirely reverent to, because that's often a trap of these movies or these adaptations as well, is people try to hew too closely to what the comics are.
Yes.
It's really like each one is a case-by-case basis. Like on Preacher, we decided to make the changes we decided to based on a myriad reasons, but On The Boys, our choices as to what we should change were really focused on making it that the boys didn't have powers in the same way that they do in the comic.
Yeah.
Because it's just inherently more interesting to have normal people taking down these like gods. And then the other thing was to focus a lot on the corporate nature of it, which is in there plenty with Garth's thing, but we wanted to make that more of a cornerstone of the whole project because it just would happen and it would be so fascinating and so messed up and so intrinsically tied into the culture of the world if they existed. And I feel like Kripke and those guys just crushed how they've taken that corporate aspect and enhanced it to be so like amazingly
insane.
And I
think they condensed the timeline in a way that made the show just so kinetic and exciting. Like it really plays out like in the midst of these like action kind of like tense situations that really only span a few days over the course of like the first few episodes, at least, you know? So like that restructuring was also, I think, very helpful as far as just making a TV show that was fun to watch, you know, really fast, basically, because it just kind of flies from one episode to the next.
And the other awesome thing is, like, we only had to make 8 episodes. Like, that was the deal, and it's the best situation ever. We can make 8 incredible episodes instead of 13 or 10. Like, the reduced number of episodes was just like a gift. I didn't understand how good it was going to be.
But that is one of those things that's like with Garth, we were thinking of bringing up, you know, like bringing up, like, what if they don't have powers? And, like, you really never know. Like, is this going to be? And he was just like, oh, yeah, fine, great. Yeah, that's probably better. Like, but he hates that Butcher wears a Hawaiian shirt. I like that.
We will take a break and go inflame Garth Ennis, the creator of The Boys, more in the second half of the show with my guests, Evan Goldberg and Seth Goldberg, the executive producers of The Boys and Good Boys, and so many other things. It's a treat. There's much more to come and talk about. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're still talking about comics. Dear God in heaven, it's the treatment. We're talking about The Boys with my guests, Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, who helped to bring so much of the great Garth Ennis stuff to the screen. I guess because we're talking about, too, but this idea of the culture having these pieces where the culture is constantly being examined.
Yeah.
And that's something that comes to play in your work, too, in an interview or This Is the End or Superbad or Pineapple Express. People sort of examining themselves and sort of telling you who they are all the time. And I kind of wondered where that comes from for you guys, because that's so often what you do as writers, and then the stuff that you find to produce and bring to the screen, that happens there too, that meta quality we're talking about.
It's all an expression of who we are in some capacity, and we are just like fascinated by a lot of different stuff and are always discussing the times, and just we choose our projects based on things that seem investigative.
Yeah, sure.
to to the world we live in. Like, yeah. It's fascinating to us.
It is. And I think, you know, I think the first thing we wrote was so personal, you know, like it was based literally on our lives and things that were happening to us. And I think, and another thing is like, it takes so long to make a movie. Like, you're working on it for years and years and years. And I think what we found with Superbad and Pineapple Express, which was another movie that was written like years and years and years before it was made, is like the only thing that kept us going is that we like truly loved these movies and that they were like super interesting to us and engaging to us and examining ideas that were really relevant to us. And I think as we kept making movies, one of the things, like, just having that experience was very informative because it was, like, the thing that kept us going was that we really were interested in these ideas and that we felt like we were examining at least some element of some idea that we couldn't point to a lot of other movies that had really examined that exact thing, you know? And that, to us, is also always very exciting when you're at least able to justify to yourself that you're doing something original. And so I think as we've continued to make movies, yeah, it's been, you know, with the inner, like, celebrity culture is obviously something that we examine a lot with This Is the End and The Interview and The Boys. And, you know, because it's I'm a famous person and Evan is around famous people all day, every day. And, like, I think the fact that, you know, partnerships, you know, male friendships, we've been partners for 20 years, I think.
We're friends, in case.
And we're also friends. And so, like, and religion is also something that we talk a lot about and we're generally wildly fascinated by. And that's why things like Preacher and Sausage Party are really engaging to us and for us to work on for decades, because, you know, like, you don't work on Sausage Party for like 8 years without really thinking you're doing something pretty interesting, which is the sad thing.
Well, you said religion, though, but I guess I will ask you the question of at some point in all these things, the idea of life or death and the sort of the agreement you make with yourself about how you feel about death,
yeah,
comes into almost all these things.
Well, that was something very early on. I think Pineapple Express was the first thing that we made where, like, it's funny. At the time, there were not a lot of comedies that had life or death stakes. And it's kind of a hard thing to do. And I think with Pineapple Express, that was almost the thing we realized we were good at.
Yeah, a lot of it was off Midnight Run, which had high stakes.
And Pulp Fiction was a movie that we were, like, obsessed with, you know, which also, obviously, people are getting killed and shot, but it's still, like, a funny movie a lot of the time.
Well, I guess that's why, like, people always say, like, Pineapple Express shouldn't have been, like, the idea. You hear it, you're like, ah, it's a weed action movie, and you don't think that should be a movie. But what makes it a movie and a real story is that there's a real story and there's stakes and, like, these guys are going to die.
Well, yeah, they really think they might die.
And you get the sense that they haven't quite figured out who they are, but they will soon, kind of. And, like, they're coming into their own and they're going to die right before their life begins. And, like, that's as big a story as it gets. And it needs to be like that in comedies because they're so silly and funny sometimes that you have to ground it in, like, extra stakes.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, honestly, that, like, as we have continued writing throughout our careers, like, we've recognized, I think, that we are specifically good at, whereas a lot of other comedy people are not as good at it, is finding a way to balance the tone between life and death stakes and comedy while it being under some umbrella of a reality level that doesn't diminish those stakes. And you actually feel like you're watching a movie where the characters might die and that would be a bad thing in the movie.
And that,
you know,
kind of stuff happens. It's not just our writing skills alone. It's that, like, in real life, like, when people are in war, they don't, like, not laugh the whole time. You know, there's funny moments in everything, in dark moments. Like,
but the thing, honestly, the scene we reference the most and is the scene that was, like, the biggest aha moment for that for us, I think, is the scene in Pulp Fiction where John Travolta shoots the guy's head in the back of the car by accident. Because it, like, it's funny, it's shocking.
And there are repercussions.
There are repercussions that are totally real. It instantly, and that, I think, also, like, to
especially
us,
down to, like, Quentin Tarantino's wife in the sequence.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He's, like, really worried about
his
marriage.
He's worried about his wife. They don't know about that. They're cleaning the brain. And I think that's also one of the things that got us really obsessed with, like, the nuance of everything. And that is what's funny, I think, about The Boys also, is, like, it's those little unexplored areas of things that are actually, like, the really funny and weird and interesting things, where it is like the corporate side of being a superhero, being told where to go and what to do. Those little things that like are probably happening with the Avengers, but you just don't see that stuff, you know? And like, I think that is the stuff that the egos and how crazy you would be and how competitive you would be with the other people and all that kind of stuff is
to connect to obviously the Avengers, like the incredibly great thing that just so happened to line up is that this show came out right after the first full arc of an Avengers like
the first
series.
Full Marvel arc, actually.
Yeah,
not just the Avengers,
yeah,
but all
Marvel.
Of that.
Yeah. So now like the average viewer understands the general framework of comics.
It's true.
For the first time ever, from start to finish, they get how good it can get. They never understood. You did, and we did, but they didn't understand how good it could get, and now they do, and they understand they need to wait. And they understand all the pieces that are going to come together and can come together and the heights it can reach. It's just the best.
No, it's nice.
We're talking about call and response with my guests, Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, whose newest projects are Good Boys and the Boys. But when we're talking about Pineapple Express, one of the things I think people forget is in the prologue, Bill Hader's character is killed.
Absolutely.
But at the very beginning of this, they show that there are repercussions and violent actions that take place.
Yeah.
And there's always context. And what you guys have had the luxury of with The Boys, which you should say is a sort of a dystopian superhero world and about a horrible accident that happens and a real life team of people, or normals, we should say, as compared to superheroes.
Normies.
Norms as compared to soups.
There's a lot of ways to refer to that.
Trying to fight this off. But what you didn't have to do with The Boys now, but you didn't do it in Preacher either, you didn't have to create a context.
No.
Because thanks to not only a generation of Avengers movies, but many, many DC movies as well, people now understand that there are worlds. You don't have to explain the world anymore.
No.
The way that you had to in the first Batman movies or the first Superman movies, now you can just sort of say, you can just start off rather than have a real prologue saying, in this place, which must have been a thrill to you guys that we've now arrived at this point. But you couldn't have expected that by the time The Boys hit screens that, you know, there have been Avengers Endgame and so many things.
No,
right?
I mean, The Boys and Preacher, we've been chasing them both forever. And they could have happened 7 years ago and we would have jumped on it.
When we first met, we were talking about these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're so lucky we didn't get to make these things for so long.
No, I mean, it is very true. And, like, we are very patient filmmakers, if nothing else. Like, and it's the thing that we're imploring, I think, on people we work with almost more than anything is just, like, we've seen how, like, the average thing takes, like, 8 years from when you want to do it to when you're actually, it's out in the world, basically. And, you know, what's so funny about The Boys, for example, is like, when the first issue came out, we went to Sony and Neil Moritz and we're like, you should buy this comic, The Boys, and let us make it into a movie. And they were like, great, we will. And they did. And then they hired Adam McKay to write it and direct it. And then eventually that fell apart. And I remember being at Comic-Con, man, like 10 years ago, maybe, when McKay like announced that he was writing and I was there for Paul, the Alien movie.
Oh, sure.
And so was Simon Pegg. And I remember, that McKay like announced that he was writing, it was the Sony panel or something, and he announced he was writing, directing The Boys. And I was like, oh, man, that's f***ed up. Like, that's what we want. And then that eventually, and it just goes to show the times. Everyone at that time was like, oh, you can't make a big, expensive R-rated superhero movie. That just won't work. Like, it won't happen. And then it fell apart, and then again through some like mix of like Darwinian evolution and luck,
and a lot of luck,
and a lot Deadpool.
Of
Deadpool,
and a lot of Deadpool. Thank you,
super
Ryan
helpful.
Reynolds,
another Canadian.
Yes,
exactly.
Oh, we have secret packs.
Yeah, exactly. We all help each other. No, Deadpool.
He helped him get there, and he helped us do this.
Deadpool was wildly helpful, and like all that stuff like really made it that we had like a strong case to go in and say like let us do this.
But I guess because you were talking about religion, I brought up death because I just wanted to say that that's the thing that unites all these things. Even in Superbad, it's not going to happen, but when they're at the party, they're afraid that their lives are at stake because suddenly it gets really violent in a way they're not equipped to deal with.
No, it's true.
So the threat of violence and blood being spilled, because usually when we see blood in a comedy, it's not real. And when you guys do it, there's always like a real situation that leads up to it.
Yeah.
Well, the initial ending of Superbad, one of them died.
Is that true?
No,
no. Is that true?
No. It originally started with a classmate of theirs having died. Like, originally, the first scene of the movie was them driving to a classmate's funeral who had died, and what they're talking about is that he hadn't had sex, and they knew that, and they were like, he died a virgin, and they were, and that was the whole spawn for the whole thing.
It was a silly joke. It was that he asked Make-A-Wish
to get him laid, and they said no, and the whole time, the whole scene, and that's like the talk among everyone at school was like, Make-A-Wish, f*** this kid. Like,
he had one wish.
Like, and do it. Like, why not?
And they didn't do it.
And so, and that was kind of like the motivation for the whole movie was like, it sent them into this like existential crisis where it's like, we're gonna, like, if we died tomorrow, we would die virgins. And then ultimately we found we did not need something that big to kind of motivate the entire movie, and it actually made it a lot less relatable in a lot of ways. But
there was always death.
I think it's always been something. It's always been our instinct to have a lot of death involved in our movies.
But that, yeah, and it's just because the way we see that here, I mean, it's always in these kind of these things you guys are attracted to, there's a character who is that person who enjoys that, being that close to death.
Yeah. We're working on something right now, and that's exactly something.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. It's a common
thing. We don't want to give a spoiler, but there's some death in our next
movie. Exactly. A lot of
good thing nobody hears this show.
Exactly.
But, even with Butcher, I mean, that's really kind of amplified by the fact that in this iteration of The Boys, there are no superpowers to save these guys.
No.
They're just living on their wits. And basically trying to take advantage of the fact that the real, as it's said in the show, in a way that's not said in the comics, the real weakness is that they have emotions.
Yeah, and that they are frail and that they could die. And I think that is one of the things that I think is fun about the show, is you get the tension of how scary it would be to be a normal person going up against a superhero. Like, it would be horrifying.
Yeah, and one thing that Eric Kripke, who's the showrunner, I don't know if we said that yet, he was all about kind of making it like a cop show, where it's like just about cops taking on these criminals who are actually the head cops, so to speak, and to like ground it in that and make it really just like the smallest cops, the cops who aren't even real cops, have to take out these like official top dogs.
Oh, The Wire was we referenced a lot as we were starting to write the show and put it together.
Because I actually thought that The Wire was kind of referenced in the comic itself in a weird way.
Yeah, and it's something that we really kind of like as we were plotting out the series, like that the idea of these like it's the guys in rooms listening on headphones and planting bugs.
It's about all the little steps it would take. It doesn't just go straight to like Iron Man's like bigger gauntlet showing up on a rocket. Like you have to you build to it. Not to say I don't love that moment.
Yeah.
I love
great
it.
Moment.
Great moment. Great,
great moment.
Love Iron Man.
But how do you figure out where to show up even? That's what I don't know.
And shockingly, we're out of time. Can you guys please come back and do this again?
Of course, yeah. Fine. Luckily, we have many projects.
And finally get a chance to talk to you about them in front of a microphone.
Yeah.
My guests are Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen. Their new projects, one of which we barely talked about, is Good Boys. The other is The Boys, which is on Amazon. Of course, Preacher and many other things. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed by Kat Yoris, edited by Blake Bice, who's associate producer. I'm going to go beat up some superheroes. It's
perfect.
The treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.